A minister recently confided, if they'd only listened to me the first time, I wouldn't have to say it again and keep repeating the same message. Well, you may have heard today's message before as well, but I think it's worth repeating. It bears repeating. I could give the same message every month, every week maybe. Today I want to talk about tongues. Not speaking in tongues, but what our tongues speak. Our words are very powerful. You know, we think in words, we communicate in words. We express ideas, we express emotions through words. Very important to remember how powerful words are. They can destroy or they can uplift. And they can heal. You know, one downer in a crowd that's upbeat can put that whole crowd right down the trash can, can't it? But an upbeat individual can change the whole aura, the whole atmosphere of a gathering, like a rudder on a ship can turn the whole thing around. Words, very important. We had a going away party at my day job for a gentleman at work. During the meal, the conversation turned to a little bashing of another employee who had retired not too long before then. And as I sat there listening to this, I thought, now what purpose does this serve? What edification can come out of this? What good is it? What use is it? I couldn't think of a single good that would come out of it. It was just for a laugh at someone else's expense. But you know, human beings, as we are, often do that. Proverbs chapter 25, verse 11. The natural individual likes to put someone else down to raise himself up. Proverbs 25:11. It says, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in pictures or settings of silver. What a metaphor. Apples of gold in settings of silver. What a beautiful thing to behold. And that is a word spoken at the right time when it was needed most. Very important. It goes on, it says, as an earring of gold and an ornament of fine gold, so is a wise reprover among or upon an obedient ear. Somebody who's willing to listen, to change when they've been shown error or wrong. Very, very important. Because, you know, that's what each of us is called to do, aren't we? Each of us is called to help one another. The Bible talks about this in the next, actually, several verses, and it gives us four elegant metaphors on the power of words. It says, as the cold of snow in the time of harvest, so is a faithful messenger to them that send him, for he refreshes the soul of his masters. A cold snow in the time of harvest. It's a picture of contrast. Whoso boasts himself of a false gift is like clouds and wind without rain. Useless. No value. No value. The Bible depicts the tongue as a most unruly and difficult organ. In its wild state, it's, of course, very dangerous, as we all know. Loose lips can indeed sink ships. Someone once says, remember, your tongue is in a wet place, and it can slip very easily. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. And just like a lot of other errors in the childhood fables we've heard, that isn't true either. Words can really hurt, and they do hurt. Like so many other things in life, words can leave a lasting impression. Proverbs 18:21. Long as we're here, let's turn to an important passage here. It says, death and life are in the power of the tongue. Death and life itself in the power of the tongue. And they that love it shall eat the fruit thereof. You'll get what you pay for, in other words. Death and life. And if not kill, overly critical words can do a lot of damage, can't they? A lot of damage. Someone in a rage can lash out and cause irreparable harm to someone for a long, long time, maybe even a lifetime. Each of us can remember angry words as a child that were spoken to us, and we still haven't forgotten them. And when we think of that, something sparks, you know, and you remember that whole scene over again and how powerful it was, how it affected you, and how it hurt. Each of us has experiences like that. Proverbs 18:8, the words of a talebearer are as wounds, and they go down into the innermost parts of the belly. It hurts right down deep. Someone who perhaps makes a story up about you, trying to get back at you, whatever it might be, and it hurts. It really does. What we say can not only hurt, but can also be very destructive. Angry words are a way of really of hitting someone without using the fist. Watch the body language of someone who's under the attack of words and just see how it hurts so deeply. Look at the eyes. You can tell how damaging and how deeply it cuts. You can see right in their eyes. Something just as important as what we say is how we say it. It's interesting. Have you ever had someone, and I worked with somebody this way, who could correct you and you didn't even realize it till later? They said it just the right way and in just the right tempo and the right nuance that the point got across and you still felt good. That is a gift. You know, that really is. You ever had someone correct you and it didn't hit you until later? Oh, what happened? Is that really what he meant? Yeah, that's what he meant. I didn't even realize it. They're diplomatic. They use finesse, tact, and they're skillful at it. They got their message through without ruffling a single feather. You know, if there was anyone in the scripture that could do that, it was Yahshua the Messiah, wasn't it? Yahshua had such a skill this way. It was unmatched, the power of the way he communicated to people. His employment of parables was just superb. And the people it was directed at often didn't even click at first. No doubt these religious leaders walked away thinking, we've just been reprimanded and we never even saw it coming. And he put a great deal of thought into what he said before he said it. And if we did that, we could alleviate 90% of our problems created by our tongues if we just stop and think before we speak. I've known a couple of people in my life who were that way. You talk to them, you ask them a question, you don't get an immediate response. You get a little pause there. They're thinking, how do I respond in the best way? Very effective, and they were always in control of their tongue. And we've known other people who just blab all the time and saying all sorts of crazy things. And people think, whoa, you know, what's wrong with that person? When you're confronted in a situation, ask yourself, how will what I'm about to say be received? What effect will it have on that person? Is it worth saying even? Many times it's not even worth saying, so don't even say it. Will it make any difference beyond satisfying my own whatever, my own self? Maybe my own ego, my own desire to express myself, get back at him, or whatever it might be. And doesn't the word, tell us to subjugate our feelings and our desire sometimes to do this? The book of James has a great deal to say about the tongue. A great deal to say, especially chapter 3. James said, if you can master your tongue, you are indeed a perfected saint. If you can master what you say. Oftentimes what we say to our spouse, to our children, we later on think, why did I say that? You know, I could have done much better. James tells us we can do better. The tongue is a tattletale, and it tells on the heart. Yahshua said, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. What's in your heart is going to come out. It's going to come out sooner or later out of your mouth. Because the tongue is a window into the soul, into the heart. And a person who doesn't say much, you know, is really kind of hard to get close to because you don't know what they're thinking. You don't know what they're all about. A faith which does not transform the tongue is really not much of a faith at all, is it? It's a subject that I think that we need to work on, all of us, because what we say is the mark of our true faith, and it should be a proper measure of those who live by that faith and a good reflection of them and how they perceive life and how they express their faith. This is very important to James, of great concern to him. He mentions the tongue in every chapter of his book. He spends a large portion, as I said, in chapter 3, dealing specifically with the matter of the tongue. James teaches that true worshipers will manifest the truth in the way that they live. It'll show up by the way that they overcome temptations, as we see in chapter 1. James, a servant of Elohim, and the Master, Yahshua the Messiah, to the 12 tribes, which are scattered abroad, greeting, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into different temptations, knowing this, that the trying of your faith works patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that you may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of Elohim, that gives to all men liberally, and upbraids not, and it shall be given him. Let him ask in faith, nothing wavering, for he that wavers is like a wave of the sea, driven with the wind and tossed. A double-minded man, verse 8, is unstable in all his ways. He can't make up his mind. He doesn't know what to do. He acts one way in one situation and entirely different in a similar situation. You don't know. That's an unstable man, he says. Blessed is a man that endureth temptation, verse 12. For when he is tried, he will receive the crown of life, which the Master has promised them that love him. Endures temptation. Endures the desire to say the wrong thing, but wants to say it anyway, just to get even. Well, chapter 1 is very important in this regard. But what we say will show up many times in the way that we live. It will show up by our obedience to the Scriptures in what we say, by our loving concern for the need of others without partiality. And that's really what he's talking about in verse 1. Well, actually, the whole chapter of 2 here talks about faith and works and how important it is. Verse 14, chapter 2. What does it profit, my brethren, though a man say he has faith and have not works? Can faith save him? If a brother or sister be naked and destitute of food, and one of you say, well, why don't you just depart in peace, be warmed and filled, notwithstanding you give them not those things which are needful to the body. What good is that? What profit is that? Have you ever heard someone say that? Well, I hope you do better. Well, you know, I'll pray for you. When they could a lot easier just give them what they need and be a lot more profitable. Even so, faith, if it has not works, is dead, being alone. Yea, a man may say, you have faith, and I have works. Show me your faith without your works, and I will show you my faith by my works. And then he says that the transformation of one's life will be manifest in the way we talk. What we do and how we really feel is going to be expressed by how we express ourselves. He says in verse 26 of chapter 1, if any man among you seem to be religious, but bridles not his tongue, he deceives his own heart. And that man's religion is useless. The way we talk is one of the most important ways in which we express the life of Yahshua the Messiah and how each of us should reflect that. And one of the most difficult of all aspects of our lives to manage is our tongue. How often have we said something and wished we could take it back? Say something that, oh, I didn't even mean to say that. I got an email from somebody, in this day of separation of church and state, This person wrote an email to everybody in the whole office there, and it was a prayer. And apparently they got some flack because they sent another email saying, I recall that email. Well, didn't do an awful lot of good except to satisfy someone who didn't appreciate it. But the email went out, and our words are the same way. You hit the wrong button, and it's gone, and it's already said. You can't take it back. Same thing with how we express ourselves. How often have we done that? It's a common human affliction. We speak before we think. We respond out of emotion. We respond out of fatigue, maybe, sometimes out of stress, which if we had just thought, stopped a minute, took a breath, we wouldn't have reacted that way. And we'd have been a lot better off. And we wouldn't have to undo some damage that we might have done. James 1:19. Let's go back to there. I didn't finish. Wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. What is that telling you? It's telling you that he's thinking about his actions. He's thinking. Swift to hear, slow to speak. Slow to speak. You never learn anything when your mouth is open. You learn by listening. Slow to wrath. And there's another one. For the wrath of man works not the righteousness of Elohim. That doesn't do any good to get angry about things for no reason. Wherefore, lay apart all filthiness and superfluity of naughtiness and receive with meekness the engrafted word, which is able to save your souls. The word. Slow to speak can mean think before you speak, or it can also mean, do I need to say it at all? Do I need to just be quiet this time and just listen? Should I just hold my tongue? I think it might be advantageous if we held our tongue a little more. Why doesn't James discuss the heart? Why the tongue? The mouth is only responding to the heart. What's inside? What's what you're feeling inside? In Hebrew, thought and language, which is very metaphorical, the focus is often on the guilty one, the guilty member. For example, we read about feet swift to shed blood. Well, feet aren't shedding blood. They aren't culprits in a murder. But in the Hebrew desire for concrete expression, they often use these types of metaphors, which is another reason we can show that the New Testament is Hebraic in origin. It's full of them. It's full of them. The Greek isn't that way. I'd like to talk to Steve, the fellow that was here for Passover. He's from Greece. And I asked him one time, is the New Testament Greek easy to understand? He said, no, it's not really the same Greek that they speak over there today. I've often wondered about that. He said, no, it's not the same. He said, I can read it and understand it, but I couldn't express myself in the way that it does. And next time I see him, I'm going to ask him, when you read the New Testament, is that how you think as a Greek man? Do you use those same types of flowery metaphors and stuff? We read the Old Testament, it's, you know, people back away and say, well, especially the King James, it doesn't make any sense to me. It uses weird language. That's because it's Hebraic. And we're not, you see. When you read the New Testament, is it really Grecianized or is it expressing a Hebraic undertone? That's what I want to ask him. Because I think you can find over and over again the people that poo-poo the idea that the New Testament could ever have been written in Hebrew first simply wouldn't understand that. The fact is, it doesn't have the same type of expression that we find in the Hebrew. It just is not a Greek work. It was translated into Greek, but originally it doesn't have the same Greek flavor. Well, anyway, the Hebrew has a desire to express itself in that way, as if part of the body is working for the whole. And that's just another way of communication. James uses the mouth and the tongue as an extension of the heart. Psalm 64:3. It parallels the human tongue with an arrow. An arrow. What's the old saying? There's three things that don't come back. The spoken word, the shot arrow, and the neglected opportunity. Well, here we're talking about arrows being shot. Remember as a kid, I shot an arrow up into the air. There's a poem about that. Came back down, I don't know where. Well, I did the same thing, stupid. I sat there and I got a bow and arrow and shot it up and, uh-oh, where's it going to come down? And I started running for the house. Silly. But that's the Hebrew. So the tongue is that way. You say something, you say, uh-oh, what did I do? Psalm 64:3, who wet their tongues like a sword and bend their bows to shoot their arrows, even bitter words, that they may shoot in secret at the perfect. Suddenly do they shoot at him and fear not. They encourage themselves in an evil manner. They communicate, laying snares privately. They say, who shall see them? Who's going to know? See, the tongue is so deadly that it can kill at a distance, remotely. It can cause problems that ripple, the ripple effect, go on and on. Something someone said, and they pick it up, and the gossip starts rolling. And it goes on and on and on. And people start believing it. Well, that's what he said. Well, that's what she said. And it could all be a lie. That's exactly what we're talking about here in Psalm 64. Each of us is carrying around a concealed weapon. All we have to do is open our mouth to display it. The fool is always displaying it and constantly getting himself into trouble. The wise man employs the tongue only when necessary. Only to do good, if he's of Yahweh, and to further the truth of Yahweh. You know, the nurse puts a thermometer under your tongue. Well, they used to. Now they point you with a gun or something. A temperature gun can read your temperature remotely. But James says your tongue will take your spiritual temperature by what you say. Just by what you say. You know, the studies have shown that people judge you in the first few seconds of meeting you just by what you say and how you say it. They form an opinion about you in the first few seconds. We all do it. We do it unconsciously, perhaps, but we do it. We kind of categorize. Someone says something, you think, oh, yeah, that kind of person. You stick them in that little slot. That's the kind of person they are. Simply by what they say. Words are very powerful. Never forget how strong they are and how potent they are. There is a line that is easily crossed from good judgment to foolishness. Shakespeare said it, it's the empty vessel that makes the most noise. The hollow head, you might say. Someone who doesn't think before they speak and just blabs and carries on, just to love to hear themselves speak. Proverbs 18:7, a fool's mouth is his destruction. His lips are the snare of his soul. That's the fool. In Genesis, the first sin of man was brought about by how? The tongue. The tongue of the whispering Nakesh, the evil one. You shall not surely die. You are immortal. You're immortal. He just doesn't want you to be like he is. Go ahead. Disobey him and see what happens. And then in chapter 3, verse 12, we find that the first sin after the fall was a sin of the tongue, the accusing tongue. Adam says, the woman you gave me, she's the problem. And so he slanders Yahweh by blaming Yahweh for his own sin because he created that woman there and she did it to me. I guess virtually every husband on the planet's endured that accusation whenever something went wrong. Well, it's his fault. Well, I think husbands do the same thing. They blame their wives too when they themselves are to blame. When the Apostle Paul characterizes The fallenness of man, when he wants to describe the wretchedness of man and his sinful condition, what does he do? He hones in on the tongue. Romans chapter 3, verse 13. He even describes it as, in terms of death, interestingly, Romans 3:13, he says, their throat is an open sepulcher. With their tongues, they have used deceits. The poison of asps is under their tongue, their lips, whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness. Wow. That sounds pretty gross, doesn't it? Well, that's the way sin works. It's gross. It's terrible. The focal point of our fallenness as human beings and our depravity is the mouth. When Isaiah confessed to Yahweh, he said, I'm a man of what? Unclean lips. I don't even deserve to speak to you. My words are filth. I'm unclean. I've got a dirty mouth. I've got a depraved heart compared to you. Who am I to speak to you? That being the case, you know, right words are very important, aren't they? Right words. And that, again, is what James is saying. And so in chapter 3, he calls us to measure our speech against our faith. Chapter 3, controlling the tongue is essential. And James gives us 5 reasons why. Number 1, he calls us to control the tongue because its potential to condemn is so powerful and so great. So powerful. Verse 1, my brethren, be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation. For in many things we offend all. If any man offend not in word, if any man offend not in word, the same is a perfect man and able also to bridle the whole body. My brothers, stop being so many teachers, knowing that we shall receive the greater judgment. We're going to be held up to a higher standard. We go out representing Yahweh and his word, and people are going to look back at you and wonder, how is this person manifesting what he believes if he does not speak in reflection of his faith? He's discussing teachers here, but the context is what they say or don't say, because it's critical what's spoken and critical that it's true. Watch what you say. Very important. This is a serious thing. Many people aspire to teach without knowing what's really involved in it, not knowing the dangers, the implicit pitfalls that can result when you step out on a limb and start teaching Yahweh's word. You better be very careful that you know what you're saying. They may not be dedicated to the word. They may have other motives. They loved honor. They loved prestige. They loved recognition. They loved power. Yahshua condemns it all in Matthew 28. But they didn't love the word, and that's where the problems begin. So having introduced the subject at the level of teachers, we move on to a discussion more generally of everyone and everybody's speech in James chapter 3. Look at verse 2 again. For in many things we offend all. We stumble in many ways, he says. The implication is, and the mouth is certainly a major way. The word here is the word offend, which is a substitute really for the word sin, and it means stumble, a moral lapse, a failure to do what's right, an offense against Yahweh. That's what it means. And we all do it. We all do it by our tongues, if not in other ways. And it's one dominant way in which we do it. The Bible refers directly or indirectly to a wicked tongue, a deceitful tongue, a lying tongue, a perverse tongue, a filthy tongue, a corrupt tongue, a bitter tongue, an angry tongue, a crafty tongue, a flattering tongue, a slanderous tongue, a gossiping tongue, a backbiting tongue, a blaspheming tongue, a foolish tongue, a boasting tongue, a murmuring tongue, a complaining tongue, a cursing tongue, a contentious tongue, a sensual tongue, a vile tongue, a tale-bearing tongue, a whispering tongue, an exaggerating tongue, and we could go on and on and on. Now do we get a better idea of the potency of the tongue and what it can do? Did you see yourself anywhere in there? See myself in there quite a bit. It's no wonder Yahweh puts your tongue in a cage behind your teeth, walled off by your mouth. Keep that cage shut and you're in much better situation oftentimes. The easiest way to sin is to sin with your tongue. You know, you can say anything you want. Anytime you want to, you can say whatever. You know, in this country we have freedom of speech, and that's gradually, I think, being taken away. But we still have that. They're going to try to muffle that, I think, by certain things you can't say, especially publicly. But the easiest way to sin is also with your tongue. Matthew 12, let's go there. Let's see what Yahshua said. Matthew 12 and verse 33. One thing proceeds from another, I guess you could say is the theme here. Another parable spake he unto them, the kingdom of heaven is like unto leaven, which a woman took and hid in 3 measures of meal till the whole was leavened. And I'm in verse 33 of chapter 13. Let's go back to chapter 12, sorry. Although leaven is the same way that sin works too, and it can also be attributed to the spreading of gossip and evil. But in verse 33 of chapter 12, either make the tree good and his fruit good, or else make the tree corrupt and his fruit corrupt. For the tree is known by his fruit. The tree is known by its fruit. It's what it produces. And when you speak, you're producing. You're producing. You're producing thoughts that come from your heart. And people know by what you say what kind of person you are, what kind of fruit you're producing. O generation of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. It's almost like he just can't contain it. Eventually, it's going to come out. Just be around people for a while, and you'll get an idea of who they are and what they are and how they think and what's in the heart. A good man, out of the good treasure of the heart, brings forth good things. On the other hand, an evil man, out of the evil treasure, brings forth evil things. But I say unto you that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account of in the day of judgment. Boy, every idle word. What does that mean? That means just, well, it could mean a lot of things. Pointless conversation. Talking about just anything that doesn't edify, that doesn't instruct, that doesn't do something for somebody, you're going to be accountable to what you say. Every idle word. For by your words you shall be justified. By your words shall you be condemned. I think that'd be good to hang up on the wall at home, wouldn't it? Chapter 12, 36 and 37. Very important. Do you realize that your eternal destiny can be determined by your words? It is easy for Yahweh to recall every word you said in your lifetime. It's easy for him to put it all back together. I think the only people who don't sin with their mouth are either mute or perfect people. I don't know of any of the latter. There's only relatively few of the former. The rest of us, take heed. John chapter 7, verse 46. John 7, 46. The officers answered, never a man spake like this man. I would have loved to follow Yahshua around and just watch how he reacted in the various situations that confronted him and how he responded by his words. and how he transformed people's very thinking by just a few words he used. These people said, the officers to the religious establishment, said, never a man has spoken like this. Then answered them, the Pharisees, are you also deceived? Have you any of the rulers or of the Pharisees believed on him? What's wrong with you people? None of us believe it. How come you believe him? That's what they're saying. But this people who knows not the law are cursed. Every idle word. It says he was perfect in his speech, absolutely without error, no sin. No idle word ever came out of his mouth. No sin in his life, no sin in his mouth, never down in the mouth, always uplifting, always encouraging. The closer we become to Yahshua's nature, the more righteous we'll be, and the more righteousness will proceed from our lips. That also should reflect his. A perfect man will not only be righteous in his speech, but in every action of his life. And if you can get control of the greatest sinning member, that tongue, you'll have control of also the lesser sinning members. The tongue is the leading barometer of sin in one's life or lack of sin in one's life. Why? Because it's the instant expression of the heart. Kind of like the eyes. They say you can look at someone's eyes and you can tell their attitude. The mouth is the same way. As soon as it's open, you get a reading. The instant expression of the heart, because it can sin more readily and more often than any other member of the body, just because it's so easy to do, and it's so powerful, and it's so easy to monitor. This says to me that if I want to reflect the righteousness of Yahshua in my life, I want to get control of my tongue. If through the Spirit you can control the most volatile and the most potent member, the rest will be subdued. So focus on your mouth. Pay attention to what you say, how you say it. Don't sin with your lips. Don't sin with your words. Psalm 39:1. I will guard my ways that I may not sin with my tongue. I will guard my mouth with a muzzle. To help us understand that, James gives us two illustrations. I want to go back to James chapter 3. Very metaphoric language, again, and again I'd have to say, this has to be Hebrew, because that's the perfect Hebrew expressions. It's the perfect type of thing Yahshua even did. Want to understand something? Illustrate it. Draw a picture. Tell a story. Most powerful way you can teach, I believe, and that's what Yahshua did. James 3:3. Behold, we put bits in them horses' mouths, that they may obey us, and we turn about their whole body. How do you do that? You put a piece of metal in the horse's mouth. It lies against the tongue, and you pull it one way, you pull it another, and the horse, whole body turns, whole body goes. It has to follow the head. You can't turn your head one way and walk the other, and you know, it doesn't work that way. Same with a horse. By controlling the horse's mouth, in essence, the tongue, you control its movements. Verse 4, behold also the ships, which though they be so great and are driven by fierce winds, yet they are turned about with a very small helm, whithersoever the governor lists. He's got a little steering wheel in there, unless you're in the Titanic, you got the big wheel. But anymore, they just probably all computer. You just push a little button, you know, and it goes. Rudder in the back, and he can control this many thousand ton machine. Just a little bit. What are we talking about? Verse 5, even so the tongue is a little member, but it boasts great things. You ever heard a boastful person? You'd think he was the grandest person in the world, could do anything, has done anything. I mean, you can build up a story if you want to. Boast and boast, carry on. Behold how great a matter a little fire kindles. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members, that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature, but, and it should be but, it is set on fire of Gehenna. For every kind of beasts and birds and of serpents and of things in the sea is tamed and has been tamed of mankind. But the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. If you've been watching the trial of Saddam, he just constantly comes out and blurts out with these things of, you know, how he's still president and he's still great. No, I wouldn't do those such things. And you people don't mean anything. The tongue is just, it goes on and on. Whatever it wants to say, it seems to say. Very important that we get control of it. If you just get control of that tongue like a ship, you can move everything else. Just get control of it. And he sums it up there in verse 5. It can indeed do great things. It can tear down people. It can tear down assemblies. It can destroy relationships. It can destroy marriage. It can devastate a family. It can tear up a nation. It can lead to murder. It can lead to war. And on the other hand, the right words can build up. They can solidify. They can strengthen. They can create love. They can create enthusiasm. They can encourage. They can comfort. They can bring peace and joy. The power of words, brethren. Powerful things, the tongue. If we get hold of it, we can control the rest of our life, and we can help others as well. James 1:26, if your speech doesn't reflect your faith is useless. You can start a forest fire with a little burning cigarette and set thousands, ten thousands of acres on fire. One little flame can do that. The tongue can do the same thing. You can take one tiny word. You know, fire is an amazing thing. It has amazing capacity. You can't multiply water. You can have a cup of water and you can pour it out. It won't become a flood. It can't. But if you have a match and you light something that's flammable, it can spread and go out. Burn down a whole city. Fire has a way of multiplying. The tongue is not like water. It is like fire. And what it sets on fire, you can blaze a whole forest. And then in verse 6, he makes his point. And the tongue is a fire. The tongue is a fire. Everything his fiery mouth touches is set on fire, and the fire spreads. A world of iniquity, so is the tongue among our members, that it defiles the whole body and it sets on fire the course of nature. Proverbs 26:20 says, where no wood is, the fire goes out. So where there's no talebearer, the strife ceases. The picture is painted here of a talebearer, one who passes on an evil report, a slander of somebody. It's like a wood that keeps fueling fire. In Psalm 52:2, it says, the tongue devises mischief like a sharp razor. That's a fascinating picture, too. The tongue like a razor. It cuts. It divides. Also, 52:3-4, you love evil more than good and lying rather than to speak righteousness. You love all devouring words, O deceitful tongue. Yahweh shall likewise destroy you forever. He shall take you away and pluck you out of the dwelling place. Yahweh will judge those whose tongues do damage, in other words. Verse 6 of James 3, the tongue is a fire. The Jerusalem Bible says the tongue is a flame. That, referring to verse 5, among all parts of the body, the tongue is a whole wicked world in itself. It infects the whole body, catching fire itself from Gehenna. It sets fire to the whole wheel of creation, according to the Jerusalem Bible translation. How important, how powerful is the tongue? What can it do, really? People know you by how you talk. The tongue reaches way beyond your mouth. It reaches beyond your body. It touches a whole network of people that are touched by you. Gossip, rumors, slander, false accusations, lies, evil speech can stain and pollute and destroy so much. Let's turn to Mark chapter 7. It's so important that we watch what we say. So important to remember the influence that we have by the tongue, what it can do, and how it can either heal or destroy. Mark 7, verse 20. Here, Yahshua says, "That which comes out of the man, that defiles the man. For from within, out of the heart of men, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lasciviousness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. All of these evil things come from within and defile the man." And then in verse 10, he says, "Out of the same mouth proceeds blessing and cursing." Out of the same mouth. How can you have both? Well, you've got a duplicitous person. You got somebody that, as they say, speaks out of both, speaks in contradictory terms. Think of the mouth of Peter when he says, "Oh, you're the Messiah, the Son of Yahweh, the Son of the living Elohim." Think of that. And a few weeks later, he's cursing venomously, saying, "I know not the man." How does that happen? The same mouth. The same mouth of Paul, speaking glorious and wondrous truths. And then in Acts 23, he curses the high priest in language that has no place in the mouth of a servant of Yahweh. "Yahweh smite you, you whited sepulcher." I was shocked many years ago to hear an ordained elder use profanity. I was completely taken back. Since then, I've seen much that it's taken me back. If Yahweh's people are the chosen ones of the kingdom, there should never be any room for such things. Never, never, never. From the same mouth, my mouth, your mouth, the mouth of all of us, comes either blessings or cursings. So he said at the end of verse 10, "My brothers, these things ought not to be." It shouldn't happen. Any profane speech is inconsistent. It's unacceptable. It's a compromise. When we were converted, he gave us the capacity of new speech. New speech expects us to use that new speech. The true believer is known by his speech. They know us by our fruits of speech also. So we can offend by our mouths. We can lie. We can tell half-truths. We can denigrate, harass, criticize, boast, make light of something serious or important. We can belittle. We can falsely blame. The list is really endless. What we can do in a spiritual way. And by the same token, our tongue can be used to edify, to heal, to encourage. Sit down and talk to somebody who's really depressed, and within a matter of just moments, with the right words, start to see a change. That's the power of words, and it works the other way too. Yahweh allows us that power through his Spirit to do right and to do good. Whichever is in your heart will sooner or later be expressed and revealed by your conversation. Let's turn to Proverbs chapter 21, verse 23. Proverbs 21, 23. Very good advice. And as soon as I get there, I'll read of it. Proverbs Proverbs have a lot to say on this. You could give a whole message, I guess, just reading the Proverbs. But I've tried to show from a different perspective. Whoso keeps his mouth and his tongue keeps his soul from troubles. Why would you want trouble? You know, we get ourselves into enough trouble. Why would we want more by not controlling our mouth? Proud and haughty, scorner is his name, who deals in proud wrath. Sometimes pride can be a very destructive thing. Well, I want to go back then to James. I'm getting near the end here, but I want to look at James chapter 3 again and verse 17. Very important verse. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy, and good fruits. Good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And there is the key. We cannot be hypocritical. We are what we are. And if we're a child of Yahweh, we express the righteousness of Yahshua. And the fruit of righteousness, verse 18, is shown in peace of them that make peace. Do you know communication itself is connected to life? 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 10, for he that will love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips, that they speak no guile. They speak truth. They speak what's right. And then 1 John chapter 3, verse 18. 1 John 3, 18. I want to close with this, a verse that talks about actions and truth. And that's really what it's all about in the life of a believer. It's his actions, and it's how he reveals the truth. My little children, let us not love in word, neither in tongue, but in deed and in truth. We can say about anything, but the proof of the pudding is in the actions of how we carry out what we really mean. And so let's keep that in mind, how important it is that we express the truth of Yahweh and that we watch our tongue, because it's so evil when it gets away from us and works the carnal. And that's something we constantly strive and work on probably the rest of our lives, but it's something that's very important and very powerful. May Yahweh bless you.